the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
America, welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The big topic of conversation among many people over the past weekend was the Barbara Walters special edition of 2020, in this case on transgender children. And I received more emails from listeners to this program saying, well, I hope you're going to talk about this program than any other since I've been doing radio. So that ought to tell you something. It certainly tells me something. And we're going to have some clips from the program. We're going to be looking at one of the most excruciating issues certainly confronted by this culture. And we're going to be looking at how some parents are responding to this, the idea of transgendered children. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, to review some other issues in the news, you will recall that Gene Robinson, the current Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire, is the first openly gay man elected to the Episcopal office in that denomination. And he has been a man at the center of the controversy in the Episcopal Church USA and in the larger Anglican Communion. You may also know that the state of New Hampshire is approving civil union legislation, and it's expected that this legislation will be in place relatively quickly. The bill passed the Senate 14-10. And it's expected that it will be signed into law by Governor John Lynch and that civil unions would then be available in New Hampshire about January 1. Now, here's the deal. Episcopal Bishop Gene Robinson also wants a civil union with his partner of 18 years, State Health Administrator Mark Andrew. He said this. This is the bishop speaking, quote, absolutely, my partner and I look forward to taking full advantage of the new law. Well, that tells you something right there, that we have come so far in terms of the normalization of homosexuality in some of the liberal Protestant denominations that one of the first persons lining up to be able to obtain one of these civil unions, one of the first couples, involves the first openly gay man elected, the bishop of a church, in this case, the Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire. And you will also not be surprised that at the very same time there is continuing discord in the Anglican Communion. The New York Times, a major story released just today, telling us that the Anglican Archbishop of Nigeria, and in this case Archbishop Peter Akinola, is to preside over a ceremony in Virginia on the 5th of May, installing Martin Menns, former rector of the Episcopal Church there, as the Bishop of the Convocation of Anglicans in North America. That is a new offshoot of the Nigerian Church. Here's the big story. Even as the Episcopal Church USA has been marching determinedly to the left, and not only in electing an openly gay man as Bishop of New Hampshire, but in allowing jurisdiction by jurisdiction, the blessing of same-sex marriage ceremonies, and so many other things, moving as far as it can to the left. Not all of its members, mind you, but the church in terms of its infrastructure. The Anglican Communion is responding with a set of ultimatums. Of course, in the Latin, that'd be ultimata, delivered to the church. And at every turn, the Episcopal Church has basically said no to the demands of the Anglican Communion that it repent of these actions and cease and desist from further actions of these sorts. And so what you have here, very interestingly, is the Archbishop of Nigeria. And by the way, he leads the largest portion of the Anglican Church worldwide, the largest of the national churches. His province involves more Anglican worshipers than any other worldwide, including Great Britain itself, the very heart of Anglicanism. And in this case, when he arrives here in the United States, he's not going to be welcomed by the leadership of the Episcopal Church USA. As a matter of fact, presiding Bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey said in a statement that Archbishop Akinola's acceptance of an invitation to Episcopal ministry here without any notice or prior invitation is not in keeping with, and these are her words, the ancient practice in most of the church. This action would only serve to heighten current tensions, the statement said, and would be regrettable if indeed it does occur. But the bottom line is, if Archbishop Akinola arrives as expected on May the 5th, and if he conducts this election of a bishop and its consecration of a bishop as is expected on May the 5th, this will be a sign, a stunning thunderclap of a sign that the Church of Nigeria no longer considers itself in communion with the Episcopal Church USA. That's the bottom line. That's the symbolism of this action, and it is, as of now, less than a week away. So the schism many people have been worried about in the Anglican Communion is now no longer hypothetical. It looks like we have a deadline, and it looks like we have a ground zero, and the ground zero is here in the United States with the consecration and installation of Martin Menz as the Bishop of the Convocation of Anglicans in North America. Fascinating to see how that comes about, but we are just days away from what the Episcopal Church USA was warned would happen eventually, a break with the Anglican Communion. The issue of homosexuality is, of course, involved with what we're talking about today, with the whole issue of transgendered children and transsexualism. It's involved, of course, with what we talked about earlier with Bishop Gene Robinson. It's also involved in Great Britain, because in Great Britain, there is a Tory candidate, that is a candidate of the Conservative Party, who is in trouble for saying that he believes that homosexuality is a sin. This is how it supposedly came down. According to the press reports, Darren Miller made remarks in which he said that he believed that discrimination against homosexuals was unwarranted in terms of civil affairs, but nonetheless that homosexuality is a sin. This is what he's supposed to have said. Mr. Miller was responding to a question as to whether homosexuality was a sin. He said he was against all forms of discrimination on the grounds of sexuality. However, quote, there are certain religious texts which think homosexuality is a sin, end quote. Now, I want us to note what's going on here. Here is a man who, when you actually look at his statements, said very little. As a matter of fact, if he's speaking as a Christian about the Christian Bible, I'm embarrassed he said so little. I'm embarrassed that he said it so indirectly and with so much apparent embarrassment. But even what he said is sufficient to lead in Great Britain to demands for his apology, if not his withdrawal from the race. Let me read you again what he said. He said, there are certain religious texts which think homosexuality is a sin. And number one, texts do not think. Okay, texts don't have brains. Texts are not minds. The mind is what produced the text. But it would be fair and accurate. In fact, it would be undeniable to say that there are certain religious texts which claim that homosexuality is a sin, if you're unwilling to say that they reveal that homosexuality is a sin. But this very indirect, tepid, and frankly indirect statement is enough to have gotten this man into so much trouble that there are now demands that he apologize. It's a very, very interesting thing. He's running for the Welsh Assembly, and they're simply suggesting, again, let me read you a statement. There are certain religious texts which think homosexuality is a sin. That's all it takes for there to be public demands on an international press basis for him to apologize. William Salatan is, by my book, just about the best reporter out there on medicine and on biotechnology. He writes for Slate.com, also for the Washington Post. I have reviewed some of his writings at my website, including his major book on the abortion controversy, which I think is about the best thing out there. He has an article out today and an article out, I should say, over the weekend, published in two forms, both at Slate.com and at the Washington Post. At Slate.com, in an article entitled Sex, Life, and Videotape, he says that the big challenge to abortion in the future, that is, to the availability and legal status of abortion in the future, is not the Supreme Court, but the ultrasound machine. And he's exactly right. And this is what we've been talking about for a long time. One of my favorite conversations we ever had on this program was over the impact of the ultrasound when, if you were listening to that program, you heard one of the pro-abortion activists say, when a woman sees this unborn child, everything changes. And she says, the fetus beat us. That is, the fetus beat us. When the mother sees the fetus, she, in so many cases, has to face the reality of what this child is, and she doesn't go through with the abortion. Now, William Salatan says, that's the way the debate is headed over the ultrasound. And, of course, a part of this in the background is the effort of the South Carolina legislature to require women seeking an abortion to have an ultrasound. In this case, William Salatan, writing in the Washington Post, says that the distinction between, and he's harking back to the Carhart decision of the Supreme Court that justified the government's ban on partial birth abortions. He said this, partial birth abortions, the court reasoned, could be banned because they occur outside the woman's body. Other abortions need not be outlawed because the womb conceals them. And he goes on to say this. Listen to William Salatan's words. He says, but ultrasound dissolves this distinction. It makes every fetus and every abortion visible. It could force the court to renounce either the partial birth ban or the right to abortion. In other words, William Salatin says that the knowledge that this picture brings, the picture provided by this ultrasound technology, now some in 3 and 4 dimensions of presentation, he says it could force the court to renounce either the partial birth ban or the right to abortion. You see, when you see that picture, you can't deny what you see. No longer an unwanted product of conception, but a baby, a child. That knowledge is infinitely powerful. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We need to discuss an issue today. It's very much in the media. 2020 last week. It's being discussed all around America, families, parents. You can just imagine some of the difficulties of these conversations. And you can imagine why, even on a program like this, it's sensitive to delve into the lives of families on an issue like this. But we didn't decide to take this public. They did. It's all over 2020, and it's all over the pages of the Los Angeles Times, ABC News, the New York Times, you name it. I have a stack here of articles and, of course, clips from the program we're going to be listening to from 2020 on Friday night that take the most intimate struggles of families into the public eye, and they want to do this because they want to make a point. And that's why I needed to say that before we even begin this conversation. These families have decided on their own that they want you to know this. And they're announcing their children changing gender so that we will have to deal with this. And we're going to have to talk about it. On ABC News on Friday night, 2020, Barbara Walters, and she has been, along with Oprah Winfrey, one of the agents of a moral revolution in this country. And it just needs to be said that Barbara Walters has been very much, in terms of the stories she's done and the comments she's made, leaning in this direction. They're basically presenting children as young as 4 on this program who believe that they are the wrong gender and want to change gender. And it's being presented as if this is a natural and logical and sensible response that parents should allow these children to simply declare themselves to be other than what they are. ABC News website, this is the lead story. I want to be seen as male. The subtitle, Transgender Teenager and His Parents Share Their Story with Barbara Walters. Here's how it begins. On September 19, 2004, 14-year-old Rebecca gave a startling letter to her mother, Betsy. This is one of those stream-of-consciousness things that I write in the wee hours of the morning when I'm tired and unable to sleep. I was probably crying when I wrote it, but I don't think the tears blurring my eyes were blurring my judgment as well, she wrote. What am I? I ask myself this all the time. Right now, what I believe myself to be is an FTM. That's capital F, capital T, capital M, or a female-to-male transsexual, a boy in a girl's body. What I want is for you to understand and let me transition into the boy I really am, end quote. Now, a couple of thoughts come to me as a parent there. Number one, this would have to come as a parent to a parent as a shock, but it probably does not come out of the blue. In other words, there's probably some behavior behind this that would immediately come to mind. Rebecca said, quote, I can't quite explain it. It was just a feeling of being not quite in my body. When I was in kindergarten, I would tell people that when I grew up, I want to be a boy. I didn't want to be an astronaut or a teacher. I wanted to be a boy. Now she is becoming Jeremy. Now, just trying to follow this through, it's difficult. The mother and the daughter kind of conspired in this case without the father's knowledge to start moving in this direction. The father later found out. And Rebecca became Jeremy. Now listen to this. Jeremy began to transition into a boy almost immediately after coming out to his parents. He got his hair cut short. He asked his parents to stop referring to him as a she. He bought all his clothes down to the socks and underwear from the boys' department. He also began to wear a binder, a Lycra vest that painfully flattened his breasts. Finally, in the 9th grade, Jeremy came out to his school during an assembly in front of teachers and friends. Going to a progressive school, Jeremy was generally accepted by his classmates. Quote, the boys at my school did a sort of funny, almost initiation in which they asked me about which girls that we knew in common I thought were really attractive. It was like they were trying to kind of feel me out. it was actually kind of amusing. Well, I don't think there's anything amusing about the whole story. And I can't believe there are parents who would think this is amusing. But, you know, over a year ago, we did a program. We had a discussion about Oprah Winfrey conducting a discussion in which she actually castigated parents for being unwilling to allow their children to undergo this kind of sex change procedure and transgender procedure and process when they were very young children. And the whole issue of what it means to think about a transgendered person is one that Christians need to think about very seriously and soberly. But when we talk about children, it just adds a whole new dimension to the mix. In order to get the force of this, you really would have to have seen the presentation. But just listening to it, it's going to tell you something about what went on. In this first clip you're going to hear, Barbara Walters is talking to a mom of a four-year-old boy who thinks he should be a girl.
What was the first time that you had any inkling that this little boy, Jazz, was different?
The day she came up to me, and I'll never forget it, Barbara, she said, "Mommy, when's the good fairy going to come with her magic wand and change, you know, my genitalia?"
How old was Jazz then?
Two.
At two, mm-hmm. Jazz came to you and said, "When is a good fairy going to, I guess, take off my penis?"
Right, what she was and make it into a vagina. Yes.
What did you feel?
Just numb, frozen.
Well, I wanted you to hear that, just as it was. Because if Christians are going to think seriously, and if we're going to think soberly and intelligently about this, we have to face exactly what's going on here. We have to face the fact that there are children who are demanding that they be allowed to transition from one gender to another. Now, of course, while we're talking about this, let's remember that this can't be done, actually. In other words, you can't actually make a boy into a girl. You can't actually make a girl into a boy. You can mutilate the body. You can perform radical surgery, but you can't change the chromosomal makeup of the individual. You know, for instance, one of the sad things that I heard in this program was where one of these children who wanted to transform himself into a girl said that he wanted to have a baby. Well, you know, that's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, when you start thinking about that, you realize what limitations we're really talking about here. I wonder what you're thinking about this as parents. I'm wondering how you would imagine you would respond to a child that would give you a message like this. And I'm wondering what you would say to a society that increasingly says, if your child says, "I'm a girl trapped inside a boy's body," or "a boy trapped inside a girl's body," it is not only allowable, it's your responsibility to help them transition. Understand that Barbara Walters was suggesting that the parents who were the agents of this transformation in their children were doing the right thing. And just like Oprah castigated the parents who said they weren't really positive about this, in this case, you know, Barbara Walters is presenting this as a laudable thing. You know, there are all kinds of dimensions to this, and you can't avoid the inevitable questions. You can't avoid how quickly this gets to the question about God. Let's listen to clip number 8. In this particular clip, you will hear this in its very bold form.
Richard's prayers in the middle of all of this. What was he saying?
He said, "Mom, I'm so mad at God." And I said, "You are? Why?" He said, "Because God made a mistake. He made me a boy. And I'm not a boy. I'm a girl, Mom." And he says, every night I pray that God gives me a girl body, but when I wake up, I'm still a boy. He says, God won't take back his mistake. He won't make it right.
You know, with as much sensitivity as we can muster and as much empathy for this parent and this child, that child articulated the problem in its clearest form. You see, rather than the child believing that he has made a mistake, rather than his parents telling him that he has made a mistake, he's blaming God because he says God made the mistake. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The issue is transsexualism, transgenderism, and children. Give us a call and tell us what you think. 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, folks. Obviously, this is a very sensitive conversation, but we've got to talk about it. As I mentioned at the beginning of this program, I received more emails from listeners to this program who had observed the 2020 broadcast and said, please talk about this. And so if you were watching that broadcast, or if you've been in subsequent conversations, you're aware of just how powerful its message was and just how confusing this was to many people. Our responsibility is intelligent Christian conversation, both of those words being important, intelligent and Christian. Part of what it means to be intelligent is to actually talk about the issue as it is and realize the issue as it is presented to us in the culture. And one of the messages being given to us is that children know best, and very clearly that they know who they are, and it's not the parent's responsibility to tell the child who the child is. Rather, the child now tells the parent who the child is. Let's go to Ephraim calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Ephraim.
I'm just a little surprised and questioning what's going on in the home, that a child at the age of two knows the difference and uses the vocabulary to determine boy and girl parts.
You know, Ephraim, I had an interesting thought, too. I've never heard a two-year-old use the word genitals, as was claimed in that Barbara Walters broadcast. But let's just assume that maybe they use some other kind of language. But you're right. I still can't imagine. I'm with you on this one. I'm entirely with you on this one. I still can't imagine a two-year-old that has that figured out. I think two-year-olds know there's a difference between boys and girls and men and women. As a matter of fact, as the work of Joseph Nicolosi at Yale Medical School and others shows, it's very important that the girl identify with her mom and the boy identify with his dad, you know, at that point. But I'm with you. I'm having a hard time seeing how alone the child comes up with this. But the parents are very clear about making this claim. Let's listen to clip 9. And this is a conversation, again, Barbara Walters talking with the parent of Riley, with the dad of Riley. Riley is the 10-year-old boy who is featured on the program transitioning into a girl. And this is talking about the fact that when this boy was three, mind you, you know, still defined in many cases as a toddler, this is a three-year-old preschooler who is trying to shop for girls' clothes rather than boys' clothes. Here's the conversation with Barbara Walters and Riley's dad.
Do you remember how you felt?
I think I was kind of dumbfounded, because how someone so early in life could discern for themselves what they want it to be.
You know, one of the poisons in this culture, and this is a poison as much spiritual and theological as cultural and sociological, one of the poisons in this culture is this idea of autonomous individualism. It's the idea that we are standing on our own two feet, or perhaps even toddling on our own two feet, are an autonomous individual who has the right to define ourselves. Now, I say that's poisonous. It's not just poisonous for preschoolers. It's poisonous for all of us. It leads to such things as the self-centeredness of someone who says, I need this divorce in order to express who I am, in order to liberate myself. A grown-up doesn't intentionally liberate himself or herself from commitments. But, that's that idea of autonomous individualism. Marianne Glendon of the Harvard Law School says it's the idea that has poisoned the law and the culture. And it, of course, leads to a form of absolute moral relativism where everyone is a law unto himself or herself. And, you know, one of the things you would assume is that parents are there to tell the child what is right and what is wrong, what is real and what is unreal. And, I have very little difficulty imagining there might be a three-year-old boy who would say, I'm kind of interested in wearing girls' clothes for whatever reasons. Who knows? You know, he says, maybe I'd like to be a little girl. You know, what is being insinuated here? No, it's not just insinuated. What's being stated here is that the parent is wrong to say, listen, son, you're a boy. And here's how you are a boy. God made you a boy. And here's what it means to be a boy, and it's just wrong for you to wear girls' clothes, and you're not going to get to do that. I'm not going to allow you to do that. I actually know what's better for you than you know for yourself. The amazing thing is that so many of these parents are being applauded for allowing their children to say, I know what's best for me, and this is what it is. And whether the child is 4 or 14, We need to remember that parents are there for a reason. And we also need to remember that the entire ethos of this entire thing is driven by a sexual liberation ideology that says that normal is out. Natural is simply whatever anyone desires to be at any time, at any stage of life, for any reason. We speak with sympathy for those who are experiencing such confusion, but I don't believe that Christians can go along even an inch with the ideology that says we need to support our children in a transgender experiment. The phone number 877-893-8255, and we'll be right back. We've got callers lined up, and we're going to get to as many of you as possible. Hang in there. But there are two short clips we just have to hear in order for, I think, all of us to gain an understanding of how radical this transformation has come in our society to where a program like Friday Night's 2020 would, to at least a portion of our population, make sense. Very quickly, we're going to roll two clips. This is Barbara Walters talking to the mom of Jazz. This was the little four-year-old who went through the sex change operation. Go right ahead.
Had you not done this, what do you think she would have been?
Very depressed. I think it would be a daily battle, and she would probably just be suffering. And what child should have to suffer? You know, I feel bad for parents that can't give that to their children. Some of them just can't put aside their own bigotry or feelings or enough to say, it doesn't matter, I love you, if you're gay, lesbian, transgender. Why should it matter? This is your child.
What do you say to a parent watching who says, is my child gay, feminine, masculine, or transgender?
You have to look at your child and look into their heart and support them and just follow their lead. Because your child is who they are, and you should love them for who they are.
Well, we obviously should love our children. The question is how we actually put that love into concrete expression. And I don't think it's by following this logic. I'll be bold to say I think this woman is horribly wrongly minded on this. I think she's just flat wrong. When she says, for instance, you have to look at your child and look into their heart and support them and just follow their lead. Again, I just see that as the opposite of what a parent is called to do in a situation of this kind of dramatic need. And furthermore, when it's translated into the language of suffering, where Jazz's mom, remember this was a boy who changed to a girl and at age four began this process, saying, I think it would be a daily battle and she would probably just be suffering. And what child should have to suffer, end quote. Well, we would agonize with any suffering, psychic, physical, or otherwise, on the part of a child. But the question is, how do you actually resolve this? And I think a fair-minded person looking outside this culture who would say the answer is radical surgery and testosterone shots, or in this case, the testosterone blockers, would be the responsible thing. By the way, in the case of the older child, and this was Rebecca who became Jeremy, the report from ABC News says that Jeremy today is a typical high school senior. His name was legally changed after his 16th birthday. He gets good grades at school, is accepted by his peers, passes as a boy, and looks forward to college enrolled as a male. Like many young men his age, he worries about dating other men. I could have been a straight woman, but then I would have been someone's girlfriend, and that's not right. What I want is to be someone's boyfriend. That's what feels right, Jeremy said. Well, that's just a deeper confusion. Let's go to Jenny calling from Berea, Kentucky, listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Jenny.
Hi. I think it's time for Christian parents to examine the public school systems, and maybe it's just time to pull our children out. You know, they're learning this from somewhere, and I really think that public schools are to blame.
Well, Jenny, I have written about this myself. I have grave concerns about what happens in a lot of public schools about this, and I would certainly encourage parents to look into what's going on in your local school. Because if you heard what we were playing a little bit earlier, it recorded the fact that there was a child who came out in a school assembly, and, you know, what's the response there? Everyone's going to have to applaud. Everyone's going to have to affirm. Even where the school says we're not teaching that this is right, in a lot of cases, it's the same thing, just by other means. Thanks for your call, Jenny. Let's go to Dee calling from Denver, Colorado. Go ahead, Dee.
Yeah, my quick point is I really think what's happened with the society is we have taught parents and adults who listens to the child, and as soon as they hear any inclination that may be contrary to quote-unquote normal, that they should listen to that. And I think we've also trained ourselves to encourage more of that kind of behavior and discussion.
I think you're exactly right. I think that's what's being affirmed here. You know, follow the lead of your children. Listen to your children. Let your children define who they are. And I think the extremity of this is when you're talking about children here who are 2 and 3 and 4. I think that will literally shock most parents listening to this conversation. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. Let's go to Tampa, Florida, where Lisa's on the line listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi. Is there a chance that a young boy could love his mother so much that that when he sees something feminine, he wants it, not having anything to do with sexuality?
You know, Lisa, I think your call, number one, points to something very legitimate. I think, yes, it is fully possible that could happen. But I think it's also important for us to recognize that little boys grow up in a largely matriarchal world for the early months and years of their lives. And, you know, it's very easy that this would happen. It's one of the reasons why fathers have to be really actively involved in the lives of their children, first of all, but of their boys also, in a special way, to make sure that a little boy knows he's supposed to grow up and be like dad. And he's going to have to really be around dad for that to happen. And, yeah, I think you're onto something there. I think it's quite natural. I think children are quite easily confused. And and it's not sexualized. It's just genderized, kind of to make up a word here, that that can lead to confusion. And if you're really honest, you know that almost every child at some point, every boy is going to, you know, at some young age, is going to put on, a bow in his hair or something. And sometime the parent's going to have to say, hey, look, that looks really funny. Little boys don't wear those, and take it out. And vice versa, and something with a little girl. And that's just a part of kind of learning what it means to be a boy or a girl. And of course, on the other side, they're going to say, well, that's imposing an oppressive, and restrictive understanding upon these children. And I would say, yes, that's exactly what's happening. That's exactly what we're doing. That's what we're called to do. We're parents. Let's go to Paul calling from Beaumont, Texas. Listen to XM 170. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, we just had this situation come up in our house. We have a 4-year-old boy and twin 2-year-old girls, and our 4-year-old was complaining that he wanted to be a girl. So I guess based on the logic, what we're hearing is that we should have just followed his lead, but we got to the root of it and found out that he's home all day with his mom and sisters, and his sisters had just gotten a bunch of Barbie toys. And this was took us about 2 weeks to determine why he really, at the core, wanted to be a girl, and it was because all the toys that he could play with locally. So, I mean, we got him some rescue heroes. He was, he's just happy to be a boy now, but it took a while to really actually break down to what the core was, and it's hard for a 4-year-old to tell you that.
You know, Paul, I'm just struck by your call. Number one, thank you for calling. Thank you for talking about what was, a rather intimate moment in the life of your family. And I got to say, as a dad, thank you for being there as a dad. And number one, for your determination to get to the bottom of this. I mean, I am so thankful you just didn't say, hey, forget this kid. That's not going to happen. I'm thankful that you were concerned enough for your son. You wanted to get under the surface and find out what's going on. And I'm thankful that that it turned out just as it did. And I think it, in your case, took a father's insight into a little boy to figure some of that out. You know, folks, that's the kind of common sense we need more of. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. A couple of things I feel the need to say as this program comes to a conclusion. There may be some parents out there, or there may be some individuals out there who are struggling with this kind of gender confusion. You may feel like these kids, as they were expressing, they feel like a boy trapped in a girl's body or a girl trapped in a boy's body. What I have said, and I think what you've heard affirmed by the callers on this program, is that we don't think the way to deal with that is to declare oneself transgendered or to be a transsexual and to undergo surgery or presentation just to be the opposite gender. The audacious claim that we're making here is that God made you who you are. And we're talking here about those who can very simply look and find out whether they're a boy or a girl by the genitalia and physical constitution of the body. And what we want for you, I want you to hear, is not less than what the secular world promises you when they tell you that that you can be who you want to be. We want to tell you that you need to know more than that, not less. You need more happiness than that can offer, not less. You need wholeness, but that kind of wholeness, well, let's just put it this way. When they say you can become a woman, but no, you can't become pregnant, you can't get rid of that Y chromosome. You can look like a woman. You know, I saw many times the verb here is pass as a woman, but you can't actually be a woman, and vice versa. You can, you know, be made to look like a male. You can have surgery and get testosterone shots and look like a male and pass as a male, but you're actually not a male. I think the reality is we need to realize the grace and mercy of God can extend to our lives to such an extent that we can be made whole as who God made us to be by finding the grace and mercy of Jesus Christ and finding out that a part of what it means to be made a new man or a new woman in Christ is to have a whole new way of looking at this, a whole transformed worldview, and the indwelling Christ in us that that can reunite body and soul. Body, soul, and spirit in such a way that we will be able to know who we truly are in Christ. If you're struggling with this, I hope you'll find a Christian friend and, most importantly, a Christian church to which you can turn for advice and counsel on this. If you're a parent struggling with this with your children, here's my plea. Don't take your cues from Oprah and Barbara Walters from the secular, scientific, and therapeutic community, but rather find your bearings in the local church where the Word of God establishes the universe of meaning. And I would suggest that you do exactly what the parents in this show did in terms of saying you need to love your children, but you need to do the opposite of what they did in showing what that love would look like. I don't think it's in letting our children tell us who they are. I think it's by the grace of God telling our children who they are and who they are to be in Christ. Let me know what you think. Write me at albertmiller.com. Just write mail at albertmiller.com. Go to the website. Let me know what you think. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation, for the conversation that always continues. I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmiller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.